You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Lindsay Benedict. Lindsay, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Well, let's talk about, just to get a snapshot of what's happening now. I know you had a child and everything, so can you just give me a snapshot of what's going on now in your studio, which I imagine is intertwined with everything else in your life?
Sure, we can talk about that. Usually my art practice is about kind of interrogating culture and putting up obstacles in society in order to kind of push and force and see where the actual boundaries are between, you know, what is private and what is public and what is shared. A lot of my artwork usually has to do with this kind of interrogation, and the actual act of making the artwork is a process I'm using as like an investigative tool or an access to get closer with other people. So that's mostly what my art practice is about. And then
before you go into that, because I want to hear, what happened a few months ago. But what, what's an example of that? Because, right, you're talking about the process and how your work is investigating these issues, but just one example of a past work that articulates that idea.
I think when I was younger, I was doing pretty basic just guerrilla art where you go into a public space and I was putting up photographs with text in order for, you know, this was at a train station in a suburb of New York where, you know, a certain group of people might be coming to the train station, commuting to New York, and returning back, and I was imagining a very monotonous life. And my reasoning for putting up these stickers was almost to have, as if someone would wake up for a minute, have a question about their own life and their own self, and that would be kind of a little obstacle I was doing. This is very early on, you know, when I was younger. And then another example, more recent, would be I've been doing these performed film portraits. So with my intimates, with people I'm in love with or with family members, I would take my film camera with real, you know, pellicule analog film and, you know, have a spontaneous, almost choreographed interaction where the way in which I'm probing the relationship is by pushing it to its boundary in front of the camera. So it's a way for me to create what would be considered in my mind a mess. Like I'm interested in these messy parts of where the relationships don't meet so well, and then you have to make a negotiation. So by creating these performed film portraits where in front of the camera, with a loved one, he or she and I are negotiating that relationship on film. And so that's another example.
And 2 months ago, what happened?
Oh, sorry. I was going to say a few months ago, I just had a baby. So the act
Congratulations. Of... Congratulations.
Thank that's you. Pretty, yeah, pretty it's sweet. A wild ride. and I'm raising the baby myself, so it's been very, you know, changing when I talk about obstacles and changing, you know, life and body. there's
Absolutely.
A lot going on.
Yeah, and where are you based now?
I'm in Brooklyn, New York. So I was spending a lot of years in France and Italy and New York. I was kind of living in all spaces and doing residencies in all spaces. And I may return to France on a more permanent basis, but for now I'm really in New York and I have a bunch of family in New York and a bunch of friends.
Well,
my studio
good.
Is now a nursery, but you know, that's a transition I'm negotiating.
So that's interesting. I mean, let's talk about that, because now there are all these other kinds of public and private issues. I mean, you know, you have a child and you're a single mother in New York, being an artist and trying to negotiate all of these things. How does that play into your work, and how are you negotiating that? I know that's a broad question, but what is that? what does that mean? Because this changes the way you're producing work in your studio, I would imagine. Like you say, your studio is a nursery now. So
it's true. It's I'm trying to assess how it's changing. A curator called me from Berlin kind of almost a month or two after I had the baby to say, you know, in a month from now, can you do a performance? And, you know, my whole body is just trying to take care of the baby, take care of myself. You know, it's hard enough to feed myself and sleep, and this curator is inviting me to perform at Dance Space in New York, which is a great establishment where I admire a lot of the works that happen there. So, you know, the first thing I say is like, yes, of course, no problem, knowing full well that physically there's no way I can do this performance. So, you know, I said yes, I did the performance, and it was a painful challenge to... I had a great collaborator.
When was that performance? When was that performance?
That just happened in January, so 2016. It was called Kindreds, a song about animals. And
wait a minute. So that was done before you had the child.
No, I had the baby in August. So now I'm 7 months.
August.
Yes. I said a few months ago. I think you may have heard 2 months ago, but...
Oh, 7 months ago. I see. You had the baby 7 months ago, so then you did the performance. And what happened at the performance? Because that is... Yeah, how did you navigate that? It was difficult and painful, and what happened?
So it was challenging. having rehearsals is almost impossible because I was breastfeeding, and we would try and bring the baby to the... We rent space at Shea Bushwick, which they have great, you know, dance spaces to rent. And so I would bring the baby to this gorgeous warehouse in Bushwick where we would be rehearsing. And the performance, because it's ultimately about kind of a body-animal relationship with another, the act of having the screaming baby in the rehearsal studio almost helped heighten that that rehearsal process. And when we did the run through, I actually carried the baby while doing the dance just before as a dress rehearsal. And Judy, the director of Dance Space, was like, this is an amazing piece about this baby, when before she had known we were doing the piece without the baby. I was just carrying the baby so that she wasn't, you know, screaming while we were doing dress rehearsal. But it made me think, you know, I should have been incorporating the baby the whole time. You know, this dance performance should have included this baby in all its unpredictability. So, you know, now moving forward, I'm thinking, instead of trying to really separate those two, you know, how can I make it so that, you know, she contributes to the process in some way? I don't know. I really try and keep them separate because I need to focus. When I make art, I really need to focus, and I need to be very detail-oriented. And, you know, my mommy brain is pretty scattered. So I'm trying to figure that out.
But at the same time, if those brains could come together, that would I would think be kind of a tour de force, because that would be all of your energy.
Right, exactly.
Well, are you also teaching? Are you also doing other things for
I am. I teach in the fine arts department at Parsons at the New School. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching a sound art course there. That's a studio course. And also a junior year core seminar class. So that's been really great. I have a lot of roots in radio, actually. So
tell me about radio. What are your roots in radio?
Oh, I'm very passionate about radio. I used to be a radio journalist, and I used to work at the lefty radio station in Berkeley, California, called KPFA. And they train you, and they set you out as journalists, and it's really a community. Radio is really, you know, people locally all together, because, you know, broadcasting radio waves is always territorial. You have to be near the space in order to hear the radio broadcast. So it's always like a community. It's always local, and that's always interested me.
And so who were you interviewing back then? What was happening locally?
Let's see.
I mean, you were investigating stories or not investigating, but as a journalist doing radio, kind of reporting on stories, you mean?
Yeah, I was working at the radio station. So Free Speech Radio News has independent freelance reporters all over the world. So I was, you know, a freelance radio reporter in Oakland, California. But then we also connected with, you know, if there was a story happening in Lagos, we actually had a reporter in Lagos who lives there, who, you know, has been living there. And so that we get the story from someone who's actually living there instead of sending, you know, someone from the West over to a different area of the world in order to take, you know, kind of a angled view. We like to have the people who are already living in those places give the story. I mean, that's a different story than the radio broadcast story. But I'm trying to think of a local open story that
well,
I was
radio now it's a little it's changing. I mean, radio in some ways is territorial, but this is it's broadcast and then it's shared. The majority of listens for this particular show comes through sharing on email and Facebook. That it goes out to, you know, over 10,000 people now. So it's a different world. It's being globally listened whenever anybody wants on their phone. You know, the podcast is really seems to be where the very kind of unglamorous realm that radio is now in.
I know. Right in my neighborhood in Brooklyn,
as radio, you know, it just doesn't. I mean, that's my feeling. It's just what people still ask, like, what is a podcast? Some people are really into them. Other people, it just doesn't even make sense what they are.
Yeah. Now, right in my neighborhood, there's a container ship, kind of right under the BQE, that has just become a radio station. And I was very excited because I was imagining it would be,
transmitting
radio right in my neighborhood.
Right.
But it's actually internet radio. But that's great.
Oh, it is? They're not transmitting? Because I read about that and I thought they were transmitting. That's internet radio. Oh, that's interesting. So maybe we should talk a little bit about, I mean, since this is a part of your process and what just came out of that dance, you know, what it means to have a child in the art world and work with that, because either the child is kind of incorporated into what you're doing or there's some kind of, you know, incredible juggling happening. I know my wife and I, you know, who are a collaborative, had a child, and it was just going to openings was a huge deal, you know.
Yeah.
Or having a meeting with a curator, we'd have to bend over backwards to get a babysitter and all this stuff at you know, with really great cost, even if it's just whatever it is. And it was a challenge. It was a real challenge. And, you know, part of the challenge for me was, do I hide the fact that we have a baby or not? We didn't, but, you know, it was kind of, it was difficult. I don't know. What are you finding now in the art world? It's been 7 months. You're an artist that's been in the art world for a while and done a lot of things.
Those are great examples. I've been bringing Simone to everything since she was 8 weeks old. We've been going to lectures and discussions and museums. I mean, not for her to see art, but for me to go see the art, and she's with me, you know, going to discussions and lectures. And I guess the harder part is actually there's a lot of artwork, which is sitting in front of your computer and writing grants or doing readings and research or really just keeping up buyer relations. So, like, there's the studio, which is playful and it can be playful. There's going out to openings, which is active. And then I feel like there's this area, which is sitting in front of a computer, you know, not fun, and you can't concentrate on the baby and sitting in front of a computer, that this is the area that I'm having most trouble being able to still put energy into. I just wanted to...
Right, and that's interesting because that is about communication, of course, with your peers and everyone in the art world, which is kind of essential, but it's right. It's actually, you know, in 2016, it's having the time to be at the computer.
Yeah, it's writing grants and applying to residencies and continuing to apply to opportunities. I have a great example of Mendy Obadike. I was at this panel. It was an amazing panel that the Verilist put out called, it was like The Politics of Listening. And, you know, Lawrence Abu Hamdan gave the keynote, and it was a three-day-long conference about the politics of listening. So, and Mendy Obadike was on a panel discussion, and she had her toddler, you know, strapped onto her and sat and gave her, you know, her feedback and her the points that she was making while the child was completely nestled, just attached to her in her carrier for the whole 2 hours. I was like, I sat her down after, I was just pregnant at the time. I was like, how did you do this? You know, this is amazing. You're having no problem. So I thought that was a great example. She really brought the child to this very important panel discussion that she was on and was able to highly function with this great little sweet child that would sometimes peek his head up, look around, and then go back down.
That is a great example. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Well, also, I think maybe sometimes attitudes aren't what I thought they were when my wife and I were trying to, you know, make appointments without our child. I remember this one curator we met. It was actually Limor Tomer, who's, I think, now at the Metropolitan curating performance or their artist in residence. But we were talking to her about something in their sound series at the Whitney, and she's talking to both of us, and we're not talking about our child at all, but we're talking about different projects we're working on. And she said, well, maybe you guys would be good for, you know, doing this type of tour of the museum or something. And I said, yeah, but there's an artist that's in the biennial now who does that kind of thing, right? He seems like he would be better than that for us. And she said, yeah, but I just like working with people who have kids. And I was stunned, you know, I was like, what? You know? And I didn't say that, but that was really her response, you know. She just wanted to work with us because we had a baby. And then you realize there is a world out there of people who actually relate to that and support that.
That's
because only
great.
They understand that. Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm in agreement. I also had a meeting at Les Laboratoires de Aubervilliers. They're a performance space in the suburbs of Paris. And I had to prepare this whole email about how I was going to have to bring the child. And I was very nervous, you know, because I was very excited to have this meeting. And, you know, I was only going to be in Paris 2 weeks, and I had this meeting. And so I laid it out that I kind of, there was a possibility that they might have to bring this tiny infant with me on the meeting where I'm going to try and propose like a month-long workshop or a four-day workshop. And this space in particular is very open and communal, and they were like, of course you can bring your child, and we can't wait to meet her. And but I was imagining, you know, other places that may not be as open. Like I think what the problem is for me is, as a mom, all of a sudden I'm nervous. Like, I used to be very invincible, you know, no problems. I would just go through life, and luckily I haven't had any major, you know, accidents or situations I got myself into that were very bad, but I used to be quite fearless. All of a sudden, now that I have a baby, I'm nervous all the time. You know, like, that element, that chemistry has changed. So now meetings with curators, I'm paying attention to, you know, the signals of the child, and I'm finding it hard to focus on, you know, proposing my own vision about my own artwork. So this is also this other aspect which feels like a challenge to me. And also, socializing at night is a huge part of meeting other artists and meeting people who just see you and talk to you somewhere out at night, and then they remember you when they're inviting you to shows. So because I have to taper off what I do at night, I find that that's actually a huge area where I'm really missing opportunities as well. Just running into friends places is huge.
Right, that's true. In Maybe in closing, because we're near the end, if you had to redo that performance, that was your last performance in New York, and I know this is just very speculative, but how do you think you would incorporate your child into that, as you said? Because as you were saying towards the end, it seemed to make sense, and certainly in the context of what we're talking about and the ease of even production, it would be great. So how would you involve her, do you think?
Yeah, well, running that dress rehearsal at Dance Space while carrying the baby and doing the original piece really made so much more sense. And it didn't click until I was forced to do it because the baby was screaming. So I just was carrying her while doing this performance. And, you know, we had the opportunity to do all the rehearsals beforehand, you know, without the baby. So I was in a place where I was able to do the dance with the baby, you know. So on the one hand, it's not as easy as just, oh, I'll just incorporate the baby, you know. But
right.
To imagine that I could have imagined, if I could do it over, I wished I would have left some space, just an opening, for some kind of possibilities like that to have some weight or some presence.
It's a powerful idea, it seems to me, because, you know, a baby on stage, I mean, you know, anything less than a toddler is something that carries enormous weight. I mean, you know, I think everyone sort of feels like the baby must be protected somehow, right? That maybe part of your consciousness of all of that, you know, I don't know, constant awareness, but I would think it's an element that's unlike acting, dancing, art. A baby is a completely different element to bring into theater. You know what I'm saying? It's hard
for me to articulate
it, but that there's something so unusual about that and would seem to, like, really, I don't know, potentially engage the audience if they realize it was a real baby, you know?
Yeah, the thing about performance with adults is, to me, like, it oftentimes feels like artifice, you know, that, you know, this constructed body is doing a specific performance, you know, with an intention. And when you introduce a baby on the stage, you know, this child is going to act exactly as it's acting. So there's not this, like, screen between the audience and the performer's body. It's on the one hand, it's wonderful because there's no artifice. And then on the other hand, it's interesting because it's always unpredictable. You know, we could rehearse the dance 15 times. The child, depending on the time of day, is going to be, you know, acting one way or another. And so this element of unpredictability, you know, can be worked in to a performance structurally. But then
that's right, yeah.
This living creature with its unpredictability will always have, I think, I don't know, an amazing source for being on stage or wherever one might be performing. So yeah, it could have been this really great source of energy that would have been an unpredictable wild energy, which would work really well in our animal dance.
Yeah, well, and then there's also, I mean, that sounds really interesting. And then of course there's the other element of, you know, this is a child. She's growing. She's potentially growing up, you know, on a dance floor or in a world of art that's not just kind of watching culture, but participating in it.
Right.
You know, I mean, the artist child,
give
right?
Consent.
It's like, right. But I mean, that idea of just the artist child, which of course I relate to, but that's, she's growing up in a very unusual world culturally.
I know. I'm hoping,
I think that's a great thing. I think that makes, you know, unusually sensitive, perceptive individuals, you know. Otherwise, what happens? They become curators and have to figure out what's going on, you know, or something.
No, I think Simone will lead a very rich life and have access to a lot of culture and ideas and friends and people, community. I think she's going to live a really rich life because of the way that I'm constructing my life. But then on the other hand, I also have a lot of guilt. Like, what if she really needs structure and she really needs what all her friends are doing? And so, you know, I'm sure all options are wonderful.
Yeah, well, and then certainly that dilemma comes with the territory.
Yeah. I guess I also hope that I don't get changed away from the way I've always lived my life, you know, which is, you know, I have been fearless and I do always force my own path. And going back to the very beginning, which was now that I have a child, whether or not I'm still fearless, is I'm concerned that, you know, if in the future I decide not to take risk because now I have a child, you know, I'm hoping that I don't do that. As an artist, you know, you have to fail. You have to take risks. You have to continue reaching for things that you absolutely cannot reach. And so I'm, like, while looking forward and having this child, I want to be sure that my life continues to very much thrive. And I think she will benefit from that if I can continue to kind of fight.
I couldn't agree more. I'm 100% behind you there. I couldn't agree with you more. I think, yeah, your own fight in that process is to some degree, incredibly instructive and rich to her. There was, that's really great. You mentioned that because that is the battle, right? To continue to do what you want to do. Kim Suja, who I interviewed, talks about that. She raised a child as a single mother in New York trying to be an artist, and it worked out for her. It's complex but very rich. So it's wonderful talking to you about this. In closing, is there I always ask now anyway, is there a book that you've been reading lately, could be off topic or related, that you want to share with us?
I actually just finished Agua Viva. It's by Clarice Lispector. She lives in Brazil. She was a painter, but this book is about kind of interrogating interiority. So almost language completely falls away, and she's trying to communicate with exactly how she's feeling. She's trying to communicate that onto a page with text, like without any filter and without any construction. So the actual book is very intense, and it oftentimes, you know, doesn't make any sense, but you're getting the sense that the challenge that she's working through is amazing. She wrote an earlier book in her 20s, like, you know, about broken love and heartache, and now she's in her 60s writing Agua Viva and really just trying to get this channel of communication from the self out onto the public page in as pure a form as possible. So, I recommend
it. That sounds really interesting. Is it kind of experimental fiction then? Is it not narrative the way fiction is?
It's hard to put a genre on it.
Right, it sounds abstract or experimental. That's why I kind of said that, for lack of a better word, but that it doesn't neatly fit into a genre.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine if one were to read it in a university course, what would be the course? it might be like Brazilian studies, or it might be
experimental fiction.
Rhetoric,
or
actually. Could rhetoric. Be in a rhetoric course.
That sounds great. I'm so glad you mentioned that. And is there anywhere, there's going to be links to your website and other things on there, but is there anywhere you want to point listeners to in terms of places to look for future work of yours or anything at all that you want to leave us with? And there's a screening coming up in France and Memphis this year?
There are, one in May. They're both in May, actually.
Okay, that's
I'm bad
good.
About
this,
publicizing.
This interview will be out. That's okay. This interview will be out in time for people to go to those things if they are in France or,
okay.
or Memphis. So you're saying there's two screenings coming up in France and Memphis in May, correct?
Yes.
Wonderful. Well, I wish you the best with that and, of course, with Simone and everything else. It was great talking to you, Lindsay. Thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks so much. It was great speaking with you, too, and good luck and congratulations on your children as well, or your child.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.